El rey del huepaje, huepa, 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 es el grito del rey. Ya llegó para ustedes el rey del huepaje, huepa, 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 es el grito del rey. Esta es la dinastía, es el sonido Kiss, del barrio de Tlaxcala, nacido en San Luis. Esta es la dinastía, es el sonido Kiss, del barrio de Tlaxcala, nacido en San Luis. Ya llegó para ustedes el rey del huepaje. Huehue, huehue, huepa, es el grito del rey. Ya llegó pa' ustedes el rey del huepaje. Huehue, huehue, huepa, es el grito del rey.
WCOMLP, Chapel Hill and Harborough.
Están escuchando 103.5 FM WCOMLP, Chapel Hill y Harborough.
What sound? Do you do a sound check?
Oh, this is, it's too late. Yeah, I already did it.
Oh, so you
can
hear
into
the thing?
Yeah.
I didn't deliberately talking to the thing at any time.
No, but I picked it up.
Oh, okay.
So this is the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom show. Connect the dots and wake up, our wake-up call. So this is Dick Paddock, your co-host and engineer, and I'm joined today by Laurie Hoyt, who's our other co-host, and we have a special guest, Teresa Elamine, who currently lives in Columbus, Georgia, but hails from here, lived here for 12 years until she moved to Columbus. And she is just back from spending over a week in New York with the Commission on the Status of Women's annual event. This was the 56th, and we're going to get a report from her about what she encountered, what challenges she learned about. But first, I want to start us out with a little music. Let's see how this works here. This is called A United Earth One from Putumayo, One World Together.
Ben alanyo, di
This is Dick Paddock, co-host.
And this is Lori Hoyt, who's co-hosting with Dick. And we're here with a special guest that we're very, very pleased, a WILF member and a friend, Teresa Alamin of Columbus, Georgia, who's just come back. She was a delegate to the U.S. section of the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. They have a yearly report at the UN from the Commission on the Status of Women, and she was there as a delegate for WILF and is here now to tell us about this, about what happened at the UN, what the theme was this year, and we're really... Welcome, Teresa. We're really glad and we really want to hear about this. This is really important for all of us women and for men, of course, too.
Well, it was such an exciting experience for me, Lori. I can hardly thank WILF enough for giving me the opportunity, because there were eight of us as official delegates to the Commission on the Status of Women, attending many NGO meetings, but also able to attend some of the official sessions as well. So it was a very special honor to be chosen out of the many WILF women who applied. And thanks to some wonderful letters of support from WILF members here in the Triangle, I was chosen as one of the eight. And I was the only woman delegate from the South. So the other delegates came from places like Oregon and Missouri and Michigan and Massachusetts and Maryland. It was like all the M states managed to get in. So it was a very big deal for me to get to go from Georgia and the local newspaper and the local TV stations in Columbus on my way to New York. They were interviewing me, and it was a big, big, big story. Women's issues have strong local voice at the UN was one article that came out in Columbus, Georgia on February 24th, letting the community know that I was headed to the UN. So I arrived in New York on the 22nd. So I was there a few days before things opened. But everything opened on the 26th with the NGO CSW Consultation Day. And that's where over 1,100 women from around the world came together to hear what to expect in the whole week. Because the Commission on the Status of Women goes through March 9th. Mm-hmm. So as we speak now, the member countries, the 193 member countries, are actually negotiating on the agreed upon conclusions.
I see.
Every year, you know, they have these negotiations to see what is the official UN document that all the countries agree on to be implemented.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the implementation and enforcement remains the biggest concern.
Mm-hmm.
Because everything is in the documents that you want. Economic, environment, social, it's all in the documents. And this theme this year on rural women was very important for many of the countries around the world who talked about conditions of rural women. The Aboriginal women in Canada was talked about, and so on. But what was a little bit kind of daunting was when the U.S. representative to the UN mission spoke, it was like, we have no rural women in the U.S. She talked about every other country but the U.S.
China, Fiji, all the other countries talked about what was going on in their countries, but not the U.S. representative to the U.N. It was quite strange.
That's really shocking and disappointing because of all the farm workers, the whole problem with immigrant farm workers, or whether they're immigrant or not, but the whole issue of farm work labor and how poorly it's paid and all the other issues connected with that, exposure to pesticides, et cetera, et cetera. And she didn't make any mention of that. Who was that woman?
Well, her name is Vervaer. She's a recent appointment by President Obama, and she's a part of the UN mission on global women's issues. And there was a special panel. It was a U.S.-China joint panel, which also included official representatives from Fiji, from Rwanda, and from Zimbabwe were also on the same panel. Mm-hmm. And it was very interesting, and you couldn't ignore the fact that all the other countries talk about the progress they had made with rural women in their countries, including China. And as China put it, we're the largest developing country, and the U.S. is the largest developed country. They kept saying that, and I kept thinking she was going to say, surely, we are the largest developed country, but we have rural women in Appalachia, in the Southwest, all across the Southeast. I was expecting her to say that about the conditions of rural women, because most of the rural women who come from around the world talked about farming. Mm-hmm. And so the rural women were farmers. Mm-hmm. And so rural women in the U.S. also farm.
Yes, they do.
And so and the really bright spot in the whole week actually was Congresswoman Rosa DeLauro from Connecticut.
I heard about her.
Yeah, she spoke out, and she told the stories about rural women farmers and how one USDA representative talking to a rural woman farmer who was making an application for a loan, and he asked her the question, how can you be a farmer without a man? And threw her application in the wastebasket right before her face.
Is this recently? You mean?
Congresswoman DeLauro told this story when she
gosh.
These were the kind of stories that happen in terms of the gender inequities around issues such as farming and the right of small farmers and women farmers to be able to get their goods to market.
And if you add race into that, the black farmers who had that suit against the government just only recently got their money just this year. Mm-hmm. And this suit went on for years and years and years where they had been discriminated against in loans. So so to be a woman farmer, and boy, you'd have a double whammy if you're a black woman farmer. Mm-hmm. But that is so disappointing to hear about that U.S. representative. Now, I guess it's so easy for them to go and talk about the problems in other countries, but want to avoid the mote in their own eye and take a look at things that we are ashamed of and don't want to think about.
We would have been really proud of the rural women from North Carolina who were there.
Oh, great.
Yes, Shirley McLean, some people may remember her. Mm-hmm. She had an organization called the Hunger Network, I think, sometimes ago. And now she works with a rural development organization that works with rural women. And so there were rural women in that organization from around. And it was great to be sitting in this event because there were hundreds of side events.
Yeah.
So while the official meetings are going on, there are all these NGO side events, and women from all over the world are organizing these side events. And so this side event that was organized by an international Women's Business Association, but mostly the Negro Business Association chapter of that based in the U.S., which has permanent NGO status at the U.N. So they had organized this event, and that's where I saw Shirley McLean and all these women from North Carolina. So when I ran up, we were all hugging each other, and that was great. The room was packed. There was like standing room only. And it was the same panel where Congresswoman DeLauro was. And so Shirley McLean told wonderful stories about, you know, the fact that there are rural women in the U.S. And the women from Canada were really, really hammering it home about women in the U.S. There are rural women in the U.S. And so the Canada sisters were really kind of got your back there because many of the other countries I was looking at some of the materials from some of the women, Laurie, and many of them get money from corporations here in the U.S., like Coca-Cola and other corporations. And so I got a sense that there was a kind of silence that was emanating from some of the country NGOs outside of the U.S. in particular that were being funded by U.S. entities. But there were some very powerful entities.
So wait a minute. Say that again. I didn't quite get that. So you mean that, well, I guess these corporations are not just U.S. corporations anymore. They're international, global.
All of them.
Yeah. And so, because I'm thinking, what? So they're subsidizing or helping some of these NGOs in other countries or subverting them or whatever, mm-hmm. but they're not doing that in this country.
Well, you know, I'm pretty sure that there are plenty of NGOs who were there who got money from the Ford Foundation and other mm-hmm. foundations, mm-hmm. but that's how people are able to travel to mm-hmm. spend a week or two mm-hmm. in New York at the mm-hmm. UN, mm-hmm. it being supported by funding. Mm-hmm. And so it raises this whole question of, will the revolution be funded, mm-hmm. which many folks in the nonprofit sector talk a lot about. Who do we get our money from, and is that money going to silence us? And so I was
kind of... that is interesting.
Yes. Well, that's what sometimes happens, is that people are silenced based on who their funders are.
Mm-hmm. So the one who has the pocketbook has a lot of power in what's said and what happens.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's a great opportunity for women, particularly travel from some of the poorest countries in the world, mm-hmm. From Haiti, from Africa, from all over.
Mm-hmm.
You know, really, really poor women coming from rural areas, and to see some of those women from India and from other places who had made this trip to say to their government, you have to do more for us mm-hmm. in our country. Mm-hmm. So that was really our job as delegates. To really lobby our country mm-hmm. mission in order to do more for rural women mm-hmm. in our country. And so when the UN mission representative finished speaking, I rushed up to her and asked her for her card. And she was like, oh, I have to get to another event, but there's my aide. And so I did get his card.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's something that we have to follow up on, because the two big issues that have been on the table for so very long is Resolution 1325,
mm-hmm.
Which WILF has done so much work on, coming up with 64 recommendations for the National Action Plan.
Okay, could you talk a little bit, because some of our listeners will be really new to this. Tell us a little bit about Resolution. This is a UN Security Council resolution.
Yes, it is.
1325. Would you kind of tell us a little bit about what that is? Just actually, to refresh my memory, I know I've read about it in the past, but also a lot of our listeners may need that sort of update, if you could.
Well,
or is it so long? Can it be? Did you say it in 64?
Well, there are 64 recommendations
mm-hmm.
From civil society in mm-hmm. the U.S. Mm-hmm. presented by WILF.
Mm-hmm.
The job of the U.S. is to ratify
mm-hmm.
or to come up with an action plan.
For that resolution?
For that resolution to be implemented.
And that resolution, it covers what you said?
Like women, peace, and security.
Women, peace, and security.
And so it talks about a number of inequities, and it deals with a number of areas like immigration, you know, international questions and national questions. So there are quite a few recommendations: women in the military
mm-hmm.
families,
mm-hmm.
environment, weapons use and manufacture, and their disposal. So these are some of the important issues that come up in the action plan. But all of the 193 member nations are supposed to develop their own action plans. And as I understand it, after all these years, there's still only about 50 countries that actually have action plans. And so the U.S. is now at the point of having an action plan, thanks to the recommendations from WILF, U.S. section. And we were given these wonderful documents, which I've asked the National Office to send me more copies of it so that we can make sure it gets distributed clearly around to the branch I'm building in Columbus, Georgia, for the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. but UN Security Council Resolution 1325 is one that many of the women coming from conflict zones in particular were very concerned about. The Nobel Peace Prize winner, Lema Bowie, was there. And she spoke so strong as a grassroots organizer who had won the Nobel Peace Prize. And there was a wonderful film about her work in Liberia. So dealing with women, peace, and security and the conflict zones and issues for other countries like using rape as a weapon of war. So these are the kinds of issues mm-hmm. around the security issues mm-hmm. associated with 1325. Mm-hmm. So that's one agenda item in terms mm-hmm. of major item on the table. But the other major item on the table was ratifying CEDAW, the Convention for the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women. Mm-hmm. The U.S. is among only about six countries that has not ratified CEDAW. Mm-hmm. And so interestingly enough, in that meeting with Congresswoman DeLauro, after she spoke, I thanked her for raising the issue of rural women and the rural women farmers, and I asked her what was the chance of us getting CEDAW ratified this year, and she's like, it doesn't have a prayer. It's not even on the radar. We're fighting for the right to family planning now. How bad can it get? And so one of the whole process for doing that is the president presents it to the Senate and ask for ratification. And the Senate actually ratifies it. So mm-hmm. I hope she kind of overemphasized the negative situation, because John Kerry, I think, of Massachusetts, is now head of foreign relations in this current situation. So it goes to the Foreign Relations Committee. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping that U.S. WILF and many other NGOs in the U.S. are going to be pushing very hard mm-hmm. in this period in particular mm-hmm. to try to get it passed. But of course, this being a presidential election year, mm-hmm. it's going to be hard to get something as mm-hmm. important as this done.
And I think that she makes a point. I mean, we, instead of going forward, I'm really sad to say, especially for women, along with many other issues, we're going backwards, where the issue has gone beyond. Even abortion has gone back to contraception, which has been taken for granted. And even by Catholic women, they use as much contraception, the statistics show, as non-Catholic women. So this has been a shock to me where that's being argued yet again. I can remember way back, I'm old enough, remember being told that in New York State, and this was like, I was being told this, this was in the early 50s, and I think it was just a few years before that, contraception was outlawed in New York State due to the strong Catholic vote, so that people, and of course you had to be a little affluent to be able to afford to do that, drive across the border, depending how close you live to the border with Connecticut, and get their contraception medications and whatever in Connecticut. And so this is back in the early 50s, this was told. Mm-hmm. And not that long ago that it was mm-hmm. illegal here, because I lived in New York State. So here we are, 60 years later, and all of a sudden this is an issue, which I'm hoping that the women in this country get to see what's actually going on mm-hmm. and that it's a wake-up call. That if you get people in there who want us to have a theological state instead of a regular state, what would we call it?
A logical state.
A logical state.
A theological state.
Oh, gosh. Anyhow, so but thank goodness that they have this as a wake-up call each year at the UN for women around the world to hear from each other. Were they talking anything about how things seem to be going downhill in this country? And for women, was there mm-hmm. any talk in some of the countries, was there some sense of a little more progress than we have here? Or are these just such economic hard times all over that it's hard to see progress?
Well, I think in many of the countries, particularly Bangladesh, it was amazing to me how some of the small and poorer countries seem to have more advances for mm-hmm. women. When you look at the number of women elected to office, Rwanda has the highest number with 58%. And then another country...
That is...
And in Rwanda.
Yeah.
And Sweden is third, and there's another country that called Andorra or something with mm-hmm. with 50%, and then Sweden with 48%. Mm-hmm. So those are the top three countries in terms of women legislators. Mm-hmm. To think that Rwanda, after all that they have been through, how Women for Peace came forward, and now they run the country.
Yeah.
So to see what's possible under the worst circumstances, that was what was so inspiring.
Yes, it is.
About being at the UN and seeing the women there. And then when I went into the official meetings, because you have to have a pass to get in, and you go up and the security is very, very heavy. You know, when you get there the first day, you have to go and get your picture taken and get a badge mm-hmm. that allows you to be there. There are some community type events at the Salvation Army and at the UN Church Center that you can get in without too much security. Mm-hmm. But if you're going in the official UN sessions or in those buildings, you must have a pass. Mm-hmm. And in the go in to listen to the member countries talking to each other, you have to have a special pass. Mm-hmm. And they gave only one pass per NGO. So there were like 30 women in the WILF delegation. So every morning we would meet for breakfast and we put up the schedule to see who was going to be able to go into the official sessions to get them. Because in addition to the 8 delegates, Lori, what's happened in the last couple of years is something they call the practicum. And Laura, who is the president of WILF, has put together this practicum operation where all of these young women come from all over the country, from places like Harvard and Yale and many Northeastern and many other schools around the country, where they come as to be a part of the WILF delegation. And so we had 30 women with us being a part of this. So the session that I got to go in was when the permanent representative from Algiers was speaking. It was the most powerful speech of how he was making his contribution to the document to get to the agreed upon conclusion. And I mean, everything was in the document in terms of talking about what women should have. And he was representing what he called the Group of 77. So 77 countries had banded together to have a critical mass to be able to push this advanced document through. So they called it the Group of 77 plus China. And that's who he was representing when he spoke so eloquently. And then right after him, the representative from Tunisia spoke, and she spoke so powerful about women. And so that's what happened in the official sessions. And every session was pretty much the same. And I said to the UN Women, which is a new entity, by the way, at the UN. It's only 2 years old. And the woman who was once president of Chile is now head of the UN Women. And so the UN Women...
So the UN Women is
a separate entity.
Separate entity there at the UN.
At the UN. It's official.
And this is only a two-year-old...
Only 2 years old. And so what the UN Women is starting to do now, and it's interestingly enough because there are women in North Carolina who are associated with UN Women. Because when I was talking about how important it was that UN Women can get us forward, move us forward with the implementation and enforcement, I said, it looks like it depends on UN Women. And a woman from India who was speaking on behalf of UN Women in her sector said, well, we really want you to get involved. We really want you to get involved in UN Women. And a young woman came over to me, and she gave me her card, and it said North Carolina Chapter of UN Women. And so we agreed to stay in touch, and there were several other women from North Carolina who associated with UN Women.
I think we had one of the women from North Carolina, Dick.
Help me.
That's exactly who came up to me.
We had him at a WILF meeting. It was right after last year when Marguerite and Connie went... In what you did this year.
Oh, they went to the CSW?
They went as delegates last year and met her. And so we had them give a report at our WILF meeting. And we had her there, I think, at that same meeting.
Yes.
Yeah, and they were going to be having another conference a week or two later that I don't know of anybody. I know I didn't go, but Margarita, Connie may have gone. I wouldn't be surprised if particularly Connie went.
That's so, exactly who came up to me. And so we agreed to get in touch when we came back.
Yeah.
So I've been, she may still be at the UN actually, because we were just given the opportunity to be there for the first week, you know, really from February 25th until March 3rd. That was our time there. So we all left, those in the Wolf delegation all left on March 3rd. But the meetings are still going on. And tomorrow morning, International Women's Day, there's going to be a big march down the whole UN Plaza for all the women making noise and celebrating International Women's Day for March 8th tomorrow.
Well, we're going to be just moving into a station break. And maybe when we come back, we could have a little bit more music. But before we do that, Teresa, maybe we could talk about how can we make a connection between these wonderful ideas and visions and resolutions at the UN, and is there any way to make some connection with our struggles here?
And we bring it home.
And bring it home, yeah, because... you know, the Farm Labor Organizing Committee is always struggling here. And in fact, we want to, it's been quite a while since we've had some representatives on our show and or at our Wolf meeting. And I think now spring comes and we start thinking about planting and farms and farmers markets, but we don't want to forget the hardworking, long-suffering farmers who make the food, help produce the food that we look forward to. And so, and these are the rural women who are struggling. And also rural communities are struggling in this country tremendously. The poverty in rural communities and difficulties with meth labs. I mean, it's just gotten to be, you know, a disgrace and that there needs to be some kind of plan of action to help our rural communities, which are in many cases sort of withering away, and there's no hope or much hope for the young people. So that's another whole issue. So I'll let us move into our station break, and we'll be thinking about some of that when we come back.
This is the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom Hour, brought to you by the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom Triangle Branch, and we are on WCOM FM, Chapel Hill and Carrboro, and we encourage you to listen if you're within about 5 miles of our transmitter, because it's a 100 watt station, not very powerful. But and if you're having any trouble, you can, and you have a computer, you can go on to the WCOMFM.org website. That's WCOMFM.org, and click on Listen Live, and whatever's on the air here in Carrboro will also be streamed across the internet to your computer, and you can listen to whatever show happens to be on the air. There's also, of course, program listings on that website, so you can get an idea of what's available and get yourself scheduled for the shows that you want to hear.
I heard Noam Chomsky, was it this morning or yesterday morning, right after Amy Goodman's show, they have David Barsami, and I'm not sure what the title. The show is maybe Alternative...
Alternative Radio.
Radio, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, they have some really good political shows in the morning. The afternoon tends to be more music, but yeah, we encourage... this is one of our favorite radio station, our very favorite.
Right.
And also we might want to talk about our underwriter.
Yes. I was going to mention our underwriter, which is Internationalist Bookstore at 405 West Franklin Street in Chapel Hill. And we encourage you to stop by get some alternative culture, some culture you won't get even at the mainline bookstores, because that's where the alternative is kept on the shelves locally, and they also have arts forums and
movie nights,
and various kinds of
craft night.
We have craft night, and of course my favorite, the bumper stickers. So we encourage you to go to Internationalist Bookstore at 405 West Franklin Street, or you can hop on their website, which is internationalistbooks.org. It's spelled out.
And Dick, you might want to let people know about how to go on to Wilf's website. We have a website we're real proud of.
Yeah, Triangle Wilf has a website where, among other things, you can get pretty much up to date what Wilf is working on, and also you can find our archive of old radio shows, most of the ones that we have done since the beginning, on the order of 4 years ago.
So, is it that long?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Feels that like that.
Yeah,
doesn't
it does.
Yeah. So please stop by, and that's triangle WILPF.org. triangle WILPF.org.
Okay. Well, I think we've given out that all that housekeeping sort of information, and I want to get back to our guest and friend, Teresa Alamin, who's lived in this area, Durham particularly, for many, many years.
Yeah, 12 years.
12 years. Been very involved and activist in many things. I think in recent years, at least your main one was SARN, the
Southern Anti-Racism Network.
Yes.
Which is an organization that was founded at Highlander Center in June 1999. So we're kind of building and building. I originally thought it would be a five-year project, but now we're looking towards our 15th anniversary in 2014. So part of my moving to Columbus, Georgia, has been to work on the expansion of the Southern Anti-Racism Network beyond North Carolina into South Carolina, Georgia, Alabama, and other states around the South.
Yeah.
So we're building quite a group in Georgia. In the Columbus, Georgia area, with many members joining, and
wonderful.
Yeah, so it's been an exciting time, you know, to make this move after having such a wonderful time here in the Triangle and in Durham, North Carolina, in particular, with so many friends. And you know, Durham is, and the Triangle is such a great place, and I kept feeling like I need to go someplace where it's harder. And it is much harder in Columbus, Georgia, because everything is pretty militarized because of Fort Benning being there, the School of the Americas, WNSEC being there. Mm-hmm. So I have never met so many women who have been in the military. It's like everyone has been in the military.
Oh, wow, really? That's interesting.
Yes.
Yeah, I never, of course, with Fort Benning there, you know, I just never put two and two together. So it would be hard.
Yes.
But are some of them willing to listen? Because sometimes, I know I had a grandson in the military in Afghanistan in the early years, and he came home, went off very gung-ho right after, not too long after 9/11, and he wanted to do something for his country, but came home pretty disillusioned, not so even so much with the military, but our mission there and what are we doing? I think we're not really helping, you know. And I just wondered if that's not maybe an opening thing for some of these young people out of the military, you know, to see what they're facing at home. But it's still, no matter what, it's hard. It's hard to find those people too.
Well, it's hard because Fort Benning is also the largest employer of the civilian population in Columbus. So many civilians work over there to clean the place, to cook the food, to take care of the soldiers who come in and out of Fort Benning, particularly the soldiers who come from Latin America to be part of the School of America. You know, hundreds of those soldiers come in every year to get trained at Fort Benning at that particular school, which is now called the Western Hemisphere Institute for Security Cooperation. But having visited WNSEC, it's very much like the School of Americas and the curriculum that they had.
Which we might, for any listeners who are not quite sure what we're talking about, We might let them know that they had to change the name because the School of the Americas had become so notorious people who care about these things paid attention and investigated and found out that they were on their curriculum was teaching torture to pacify anybody who wanted to make some progressive change in Latin American countries. And if you want to say anything further, but that was...
Well, I think your question earlier about how do we connect at home with the global situation, and this is certainly a case of local to global to be connected with the women around Latin America and all the women and children and others who have lost their lives through conflicts initiated by soldiers trained at the School of the Americas, WINSEC. And so the whole theme of local to global is a theme of the program that the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom does every year to get us to the CSW. And so women and their security and those issues, I think, really play themselves out with issues like WINSEC, which is a victory that the movement for peace and justice should certainly claim, that it was School of Americas was forced to dissolve and to name it something new. And it's interestingly enough, and I think I do want to say this to all of the listeners, that WINSEC has been reorganized in such a way so there's a board of visitors. And on that board of visitors, there are 14 members. Six of them are civilians. The other members represent the major commands, the Northern Command, the Southern Command. You have representatives from the State Department. All of these representatives appointed by the Secretary of Defense. But some of the civilians work at places like American University and Georgetown University. And I discovered last year that the Board of Visitors meeting is an open public meeting. So I went to the meeting. To the meeting.
This is a real important update.
Because, you know, every year when people converge on the School of America's WINSEC at Fort Benning in November, every year. But one thing that has to happen is we have to bring attention to it all year long. Mm-hmm. So the Board of Visitors meeting is a chance to raise it. Mm-hmm. And so when I read in the newspaper it was a public meeting, I called up my SOA Watch friends and I said, wow, can I go to that? They said, sure, if you want to. I went to it, and to hear the representative from the State Department say, the Arab Spring countries are our new customers.
Our new customers?
Customers. That's the way they talk about the countries.
More armaments to.
Yes, who we can train to how they're going to deal with their populations.
With their population.
And so when he said that, I thought I would just drop. And so they have a public comment period. So when I got a chance for the public comment, I said, why should the U.S. train soldiers in other countries to violate the human rights of the people in those countries? And I went on talking, and so the commandant of the whole school was getting ready to make a presentation, and he said, well, I'll try to answer your questions when I make my presentation. I said, how long will you be? And he said, about 45 minutes. He went on for over an hour, and at the end, they showed this video. We are warriors. It was the most obscene thing you want to do, and that room was full of all kinds of generals and everything, and the woman who was chairing the meeting said, do you have any more questions? I said, I have so many questions, I need to have a meeting. And one of the generals turned around and looked at me, and he said, out of all the years I've been coming here, because WINSEC is actually 10 years old as of last year, he said, out of all the years I've been coming here, I've never known anyone to come and ask a question. And I kept thinking to myself, that will change in 2012. Mm-hmm. And so the Board of Visitors meeting is June 27th, 28th of this year. And I've been organizing my friends from around the country to come down to ask a question. So that's what's important for us to keep confronting them. Because to be in that room with all of those generals and the media is there. And that's what was so interesting about it. Because when I walked out of the room, I asked the commandant for a copy of his PowerPoint presentation, which I gave to Dick, so he has a copy of the obscene PowerPoint presentation, which basically says we're expanding. We're not closing. We're expanding. With sister schools in San Antonio, Texas, and in Mississippi. Expanding. So that was really important. So this really links up with the whole issue of 1325 and yes. peace and security and how we can support
yes.
based on what the U.S. is doing around the globe with yes. all of the conflicts that it's contributing to.
Yes.
And so what is the U.S. role in dealing with women, peace, and security yes. around the world? And so I'm very happy to be in Columbus, Georgia, because I met Father Roy Bourgeois oh. within my first few days of being there. And talk about a powerful presence and wonderful human being, to actually be able to know him. And when Gail Ferris told me that he lives right near Fort Benning, I had no idea how close. You can throw a rock from his front porch and hit the gates. That's how close he lives.
Let's, for people who don't know what this wonderful man that Teresa is talking about, we've had him, and there's an old radio show that we did an interview with him at Wes and Jane Hare's house just a few years back when he was in town. And like you, I was just so impressed. And he is just so humble. But also mm-hmm. he's just got that charisma, that power, and that passion. And he had been a missionary priest in, was it Guatemala or I forget, one of the Latin American countries. And when he saw what was happening, it was such a shock to him. And he came back, and he's the one who started School of the Americas
yes.
to get the word out mm-hmm. about how these Latin American soldiers were being sent to be trained to keep down any kind of unrest in the population. And he has just, it's grown and grown, so that every year in November, hundreds,
thousands
go to Georgia to protest. And he has just dedicated his life to for the women and children in these countries, for the peace in these countries, that we are not, as a country, part of training people to be killing their own people and keeping them down when there's any move towards having a Latin American spring. You know, we talk mm-hmm. about the Arab Spring, and mm-hmm. we've been part of, look at Honduras, mm-hmm. of keeping dictators in power in many of these countries.
Mm-hmm.
So that's and look him up, look up Will, one of our early interviews, older interviews with Father Roy Bourgeois, if you want to learn more about it, because he's wonderful. So mm-hmm. you're now working with him, I
understand. Oh, yes,
yeah.
yes. Well, you know, for the first time in the 22 years of SOA Watch, we now have a local committee, an SOA Watch committee in
Great.
Columbus, organized through members of the Southern Anti-Racism Network. So Father Roy comes out to our events, and so when people cross over the fence in November,
mm-hmm.
we had one person to cross over the fence this past November, Teresa Cusimano, and her mother was so upset, because it was actually her second time, but she wanted to make sure that at least one person crossed over, because in all of these years, at least one person has crossed over. And when it looked like no one was going to cross over, she crossed over to sacrifice 6 months of her life, because everybody gets the 6 months.
Let me answer. Crossing over the fence means committing civil disobedience, because this offense, or it used to be just a line, and now this offense, that if you cross over, you get arrested. And particularly if it's, sometimes you get, suspended sentence or whatever. But if it's the second time, you usually go to jail, or can be exposed to going to jail. So this young woman, it was the second time, and she had, as Teresa said, the courage to do that.
Well, the truth of the matter is now everybody gets 6 months, even on the first time.
Oh,
yeah, because I was there.
It's 6 months jail time.
6 months jail time, and generally in federal prisons.
Mm-hmm.
But they first go to a local or a county prison. And because Teresa's mother spoke so eloquently, I think that Teresa was given a place in a county prison
mm-hmm.
Less than an hour away from Columbus.
Mm-hmm.
So the SOA Watch Committee in Columbus has organized visits
mm-hmm.
so that we all go on mm-hmm. a Saturday, because the visits are just half an hour
mm-hmm.
On a Saturday afternoon, and so we all go there. So she may get to do her whole 6 months at this Lee County jail mm-hmm. or prison. And so we'll get to see her every Saturday organizing events. And her mother and her father, who live in Florida, are so happy because they were so worried that she would be there and she wouldn't have any visitors. But, of course, she gets hundreds of letters. And
although I will say to you, the conditions usually in a federal prison will be far superior than
yes.
our county jails, where a lot of times they don't have the facilities for you to get fresh air. So that's just something to think about. But having visitors is also important so you don't feel mm-hmm. forgotten and isolated. But
And, you know, it's so
that
strange.
That might be another issue to get into, the conditions in your county jail might yeah. be an eye-opener.
Yeah, and, you know, I just want to say this about, you know, Teresa, because she is such a powerful person. And because she's a federal prisoner in this jail, they give her a special yellow. They give her a special yellow jumpsuit. So the other prisoners call her Prisoner Sunshine. And she has that kind of atmosphere, too, you know, uh-huh. that kind of attitude, too. But I do want to kind of get back to the rule.
Yes, let's get back to
the rule, a women theme for the Commission on the Status of Women review meetings. Because one thing I will say to people who live in urban areas, that migration by rural women is fairly commonplace. One of the things I learned living in Durham is how many rural women travel from the rural areas because of the lack of social services, because of the lack of healthcare access, and because of sheer poverty mm-hmm. and the lack of jobs, travel to Durham looking for a better life. And I met those women in public housing communities in mm-hmm. Durham, mm-hmm. people who come from places like Rayford, you know, where they worked in the poultry factories mm-hmm. and they worked in the picking tobacco, and they came to Durham, and many of them, because of the lack of access to family planning, I met a 32-year-old grandmother who had 5 children of her own and a daughter who was 17 who had a 6-year-old and a 2-year-old, 6-month-old and a 2-year-old. So, you know, this whole issue of family planning and access to family planning is what will get women out of poverty mm-hmm. because I watch them scrape and scrape to try to feed their children and mm-hmm. their big families. I mean, they had the most creative ways of doing it, but still you're living in poverty mm-hmm. and to have children growing up hungry mm-hmm. in this country mm-hmm. is a real scandal. And we know now that many children grow up hungry in this country. So when we're talking about rural women and those of us who live in urban areas, mm-hmm. understand that those rural women migrate. So one of the key issues for the CSW year this year was the migration of rural women. Mm-hmm. And that's happening in all the countries around the world, mm-hmm. that rural women are migrating into cities, therefore increasing their poverty mm-hmm. in many cases mm-hmm. because of the cost of living in those areas mm-hmm. and now with high unemployment. Mm-hmm. So these are issues that really affect us, and we need to think local and global mm-hmm. And really organize around the conditions of women and to really continue to raise what's the status of women. Because my big bone to pick is how long I have worked on the issue of pay equity. Mm-hmm. Since the 70s, and now we know that 69 cents for every black woman to the man's dollar. Mm-hmm. And one woman from India was talking about, from the Philippines, was talking about 46 cents for every woman to the man's dollar. And so this issue of pay equity, after all of these decades, mm-hmm. we are still fighting for that basic right, which is why the majority of women and children, majority of people in the world are women and children living in poverty.
And all the studies show that if you educate women within, with some education, they usually, if it's available now, mm-hmm. will use family planning, and that any money spent on helping women helps the whole family
yes.
and therefore the whole community and therefore the whole nation, where they have found in many of these developing countries that getting jobs for the men that will get spent, you know, a lot of times in bars or other things. It doesn't necessarily go to the family, but all these studies show that if you educate and help with some little jobs or whatever, women, that goes to the family. Mm-hmm. And therefore, we always need to keep that in mind, how important women are to our communities, important to their families.
Sustainable health. And I just want to reinforce that, because the statistic that was given is that 90% of the money that women earn goes into the family.
That's right.
In support of the family. So overwhelming a majority of the money that women earn goes into the family.
It seems that just in recent years that's finally dawned on a lot of people. It's just that you keep hearing about it in relatively recent years, that sort of has percolated into the common understanding. Teresa, we only have a few minutes left, and I wonder if there's anything before we are out of time that you particularly want to get out there, or also maybe how people can either get in touch with you or get more information about the UN's Commission on the Status of Women, or whatever you would like to be sure that our listeners know.
Well, I would appreciate it if the listeners would go to the websites that will give them more information and even access to all of the documents.
Okay.
UNWomen.org. UNWomen.org is one important website.
Good.
And then the website where a lot of the NGO and parallel events are posted is NGO, for the non-governmental organizations, NGOCSW.org. So those are two important websites for people to see to find out more about what's going on.
That's wonderful.
Yes. And the other thing, I want to invite folks to come out to Durham. We have an International Women's Day program in Durham tomorrow, March 8th.
International
Women's Day. And it's going to be at the Student Union at NCCU, North Carolina Central University, at the Alfonso Elder Student Union in the lobby. And we're going to have lots of heavy hors d'oeuvres and several women who attended the CSW in New York will be there speaking.
Wonderful.
And that's right at the corner of Fayetteville and Nelson Streets in Durham.
That's wonderful. So we encourage everybody to try to get over there. And if you have friends who live in Durham, or if you're on email, get the word out, because it's a wonderful way to celebrate International Women's Day. Each year we've often celebrated it, but sometimes it kind of creeps up on us where we don't have anything in particular planned. So that is great, Teresa. So International Women's Day, Teresa Elamine and other women from the UN at NC Central in Durham on Fayetteville Street in Nelson. At what time again?
At 6 p.m.
At 6 p.m., and I know that's getting into the supper hour. There will be heavy hors d'oeuvres.
Yes.
It sounds like a great celebration.
And don't forget that Teresa has also been invited to give a report back to the Triangle Women's International League, and that will be on Saturday. This Saturday, March 10th, starting at 10 o'clock. And it will be in the Friends Meeting House on Raleigh Road in Chapel Hill. And you'll be able to find us. We're going to be in the big room, the main meeting hall.
Okay.
So that we'll have...
So everybody's invited.
Everybody's invited to come fill it up.
Yeah, we'd love for you to come and meet Teresa in person, meet some of Wolf's sisters and brothers. We welcome you heartily. And we look forward to it, Teresa.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, this has been a delight. And Dick, we got a few minutes. You want to send us out on a little bit of music here?
Yeah, I'll give you a little bit of music.
Thank you.
This is a different group. It's called the Fosco Philharmonic. It's a violin and viola and string bass in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Sounds beautiful.
And so I thought I'd... And
this will make us feel peaceful and serene.
This is called Off the Mountain, from an album called Off the Mountain by the Fosco Philharmonic.
Okay, Dick, go for it.
Thank you.
This is the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom Hour, signing off for today. You are being brought, you're listening to WCOM LP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro.
You're listening to your community radio station, 103.5 FM, WCOM LP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro.
This is News and Views, a weekly look at the events, policy, and public figures shaping the lives of North Carolinians. And now, the director of North Carolina Policy Watch, Chris Fitzsimon.
Coming up next on News and Views, Bill Rowe with North Carolina Justice Center on the push to change North Carolina's unemployment insurance system.
We've heard some rumors that we need to cut benefits or we need to cut eligibility or the length of time. And we think that will be a small part of trying to get the trust fund solvent. And in the meantime, we'll really hurt workers.
Dr. Tim Bartik on the research surrounding state investments in early childhood and preschool programs.
I think early childhood programs have such strong evidence that these investments pay off that it makes sense as a society for us to invest in this way.
And Democratic gubernatorial candidate Bill Faison on his plan to create jobs in North Carolina.
The idea that people in this state would make a small contribution in order to help their friends and neighbors is just who we are and how we operate.
All that is up next on News and Views. Stay with us.
Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views with Chris Fitzsimon.
Welcome to another edition of News and Views. Thanks for joining us. House Speaker Tom Tillis announced this week the creation of a special commission to investigate fraud in the state's unemployment insurance system, though there has never been evidence of widespread fraud and abuse. It's the latest indication that Republicans want to make major changes in the way the state administers unemployment assistance that could have significant impact.